Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Oh, no, the chorus went up from all over the house. The power's out again. Then, Mom, Jenny took my flashlight. Did not. Did, too. It was right next to my bed. It was in the middle of the floor. There's another in the hall, Sarah called up. Just look in the closet. Great, growled 16-year-old Craig. My computer is down. Now what'll I do? You think you're the only one? Piped up 10-year-old Timmy. Derek was supposed to come over and bring his new video game. Hope his house has power, if you'll get me there. You would think this whole family could only function if we're all plugged in, Sarah's husband Dave observed. Maybe we all need to power down ourselves for a change. From a parent's perspective, what can we teach our children about low-tech living? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest's career and life revolve around children and families. Susan Friend has spent nearly 30 years as a teacher, curriculum coordinator, and now admission director at Green Acres School in Rockville, Maryland, where the child-centered progressive educational philosophy is embraced. She and her husband are the proud parents of two sons in college. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Susan.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get to the fun stuff, what are the basics we should know and have for times when the power's out?
Well, what I think is really important and a good idea is to limit your reliance on electronics to begin with. The TV, computer use, handheld video games, iPods, all of that kind of thing. It really depends on your own family and your family values as to how much time you would limit. I know some families with young children who only have an hour a day. Some families want to do more than that. But decide as parents what the limit is. And then, of course, as all good parents that we are do, be consistent with what you decide on and follow through on that. So then kids get into the practice of filling time with other things. That's not only a good habit, but it makes times when the power is out less challenging.
It's interesting. I think we all have memories of when there was a thunderstorm and the power was out and we all gathered around wherever we gathered and we told ghost stories or whatever we did. And those are things that kids sort of remember, aren't they?
Well, they absolutely are. And something that we did during a great big snowstorm a long time ago, because our children are in college now, but I do have strong memories of what happened during one large snowstorm. At first, it was just a lot of fun that we would just feel like, oh, good, look what's happening. There's no power. Hooray. And then it got a little wearing, you know, after a while. But one wonderful thing is that our neighbors came over. We had several neighbors over. And when one family had a gas stove and could make the hot chocolate, they would bring that over, and our family had the fireplace, and so we could huddle around that. So those are all fun things that we remember.
I remember doing that with other families in our neighborhood where we brought supper. We came together with all the kids, all the adults, and had supper. Whatever we had in our refrigerators, that's what we had to eat. Nobody could cook.
That's right. You open the refrigerator door really quickly. Or you bring out that ice cream that you know is going to melt and have a really different kind of dinner.
In terms of what we should have around for low-tech living, sort of on the spur of the moment, when the power goes out, what kinds of things would you recommend for parents?
Well, absolutely having flashlights and then extra batteries for those flashlights. Of course, there's something that our kids always liked, who are the wind-up flashlights that don't require batteries. So in that sense, you're really teaching them about saving energy. Another thing that I think is really necessary is to have a battery-powered radio, and of course, so that you can tune in to what are the public service announcements or weather announcements that are important to hear about.
Now there are even wind-up radios without
batteries.
Yeah,
that's true. True. Yet another way to instruct children.
And I guess bottled water of some kind.
Many people have a store of nuts, dried cereals, different kinds of foods that they would be able to keep in their house that would stay fresh for a long time.
Well, there's even milk in boxes that just lives on a shelf instead of in a refrigerator, and juices and things.
Yeah, that all would be wonderful.
That's a kind of interesting scramble for the kids, isn't it, to see what kinds of things they could think of that don't require opening the refrigerator door.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that that's one of the real benefits of having the power be out, is that you have to think a little more creatively about how you're going to live. You're out of your routine. You want to see, okay, well, what could we do now? It's a chance to problem solve with kids.
And a little bit, if I know that a lot of us are interested in sort of how cultures and societies within our country lived long ago before there was power to be out. So that's kind of an interesting history lesson there, too.
Absolutely. There's so many things, so many interests that you as a parent might have to bring to this kind of thing. Perhaps you are a history buff, and then you could tell about what you've read or what you know from that period of history, or there might be some books that you're reading with your kids, A Little House on the Prairie, that kind of, you know, book that have some history to it, where you could remind them, hey, this is how Laura Ingalls Wilder lived, you know, when she was growing up, or how her stories proceed.
Isn't it nice, though, we don't have to worry about outhouses and things like that? Sort of the good things.
That is nice. That is very nice.
You said the word creativity a little bit earlier. Maybe we should talk about some of the things we could find to do with our kids besides reading books. Sometimes today's kids, for example, have not played board games. They've only played things that are electronic.
Absolutely. And I think that this, you know, goes along with what we were talking about right in the beginning, too, of what you can get into the habit of doing if you limit your reliance on electronics. So, of course, you would have all sorts of different kinds of books and magazines that you're interested in, nonfiction, fiction, poetry, plays, lots of things. And some of those would be reading that the kids had never done before. You could read a part in the play. Certainly board games, card games, solitaire games. Now, here's something that, you know, perhaps you have never taught the kids how to play one or two or three different kinds of solitaire that you know, or having a book that has different kinds of solitaire games in. And I bring up solitaire because not only can you play double solitaire, or you can play it together when you're learning how to play as a child. But then, of course, this enables them to have something to do on their own when it is time for them to be on their own. One of the drawbacks of low-tech living and having the power off is that you can get bored, and that there are times when you need to be able to balance.
One of the things I think about when I think about having a deck of cards around is what we used to do when we were children, and then with our children, is you would build card houses. And the kids who have very good eye-hand coordination can really make these creations. That's another use for those things.
It certainly is. And also just building, as you said, building card houses, but blocks. And that is definitely an essential. So it's certainly essential to have your books and different kinds of literature at home. But having a good set of blocks, you'll never go wrong, even as the kids get older. My kids, for many, many years, both when it was low-tech living or just playing as something extra to do, when their time limit was up for working with electronics in some way, they would build all sorts of things, castles, forts. They were big on forts, of course. Just all different kinds of symmetrical and asymmetrical buildings. My older son, who became an engineer, he needed to make it symmetrical.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on living low-tech when the power is out.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Susan Friend about living low-tech when the power is out. When you think about what you can have around that we sort of forget now that we have plug-in and battery-powered things, pipe cleaners and dominoes and those wonderful tubes that are in toilet paper and paper towel holders that became all kinds of things, towers and other things, and blankets and pillows and amazing things. And the cardboard boxes, of course, were the best of all because they could be parts of a train or parts of a house or a fort or who knows. And as long as you don't mind your house being decorated with major stuff, There seems to be unlimited amounts of things you can do.
I think you should elaborate a little bit on blankets and pillows, because in your house they became very elaborate forts.
Yes, they did. We had almost permanent structures. It wasn't only the fellow who became the aerospace engineer, but it was the fellow who became the poet. And, you know, they all enjoyed very much making forts.
I just remember your kids took the blender into the fort.
Oh, the blender!
Other interesting things into the fort.
Well, we certainly had forts as well, and all sorts of household items can become the source of play. Laundry baskets certainly are so much fun. And you don't have to limit your building to even what's in the living room or the family room or the blocks themselves. You can bring the cans out from the kitchen or those kinds of things. It's really helpful if you have an extra space in your house where you can set these things up so that it can stay up. And then the children can literally build on what they've done over days' time, hoping that your power is not out over days' time. But they might want to continue and go back to what it is that they started even when the power is on.
The nice thing, too, it seems to me, is we got, as adults, so invested in, oh, isn't this a wonderful creative edifice that they did? And that was lovely for a time, but we realized that it was really the process and not the product, because the kids had a good time doing it, and then if it fell over, well, that was okay, because then they would build it a different way the next time, which to us as adults is so foreign, because we want a thing, and we forget that the idea was in the conception and the carrying it out rather than in what happened at the end.
I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. Kids' imaginations can really take off with this kind of thing, too. And I think as parents, we can encourage that by going in and taking a look at the forts or whatever it is that they've built and say, tell me about that, instead of what is that? Just tell me about it. And then they begin to tell the story of what it is that they've built. And you get to know who they are from their mind's eye of what it is that they're going into and coming out of. And then sometimes that can become such a stage for all sorts of different kinds of imaginary play, which with some kids, you know, can go into creating a play. And maybe they would want to have musical accompaniment, which might be to the tune of Pots and Pans in the kitchen, or it might be some instruments that they actually do, you know, have that they're practicing playing. And there's all sorts of extensions that can happen from what is built. It can become the stage.
Well, I know, for example, some kids are into arts and crafts kinds of things, so we all try to keep some supplies at home for that. And then you have to know your own kids' interests.
Absolutely. Arts and crafts, I'm sure many of you families have a whole box with feathers and glitter and pens and paper and different kinds of paper and glue, shelf paper for really long projects where you could just roll out the paper and they can be drawing through from one room to another, many kinds of activities like that. Again, it helps to have something like a plastic tablecloth to put under your art project that you're going to be doing so that you don't really care that much when the glue and the glitter goes off the page. That's, you know, all part of the fun.
We had a project when we visited one of our grandchildren where we were there for a time and it was raining. And so we couldn't go outside, and he has a kitchen floor that has tiles on it. And so what we did was we took that kind of tape that doesn't take paint off or anything else, that painter's tape. And he and I together laboriously made numbers on each of the tiles, and he made a hopscotch game. And he was quite happy. I don't know whether his parents finally decided to take the tape off the floor, but he was very happy to have his own hopscotch game in the kitchen.
Oh, and enough, that's a way to be physical, too. And sometimes when you're cooped up, you need to be able to do something that's not just plain racing through the house. Do something physical so you can get your body involved. Again, this is a way where, you know, parents' interests can certainly be brought into account. Maybe you're a person who likes to do aerobics or that you like to do yoga, and this would be a time to teach that to your child. And that would get your body moving, which is really very important, too.
How about safety issues we should remember and remind our children about?
Well, certainly if you have a fireplace going, you should make sure that the kids know not to get really close to the fire. Fires of all sorts, candles, those are fascinating to children, and they can be quite dangerous, of course, depending on the age of the child. But you have to monitor them at all times around any kind of an open flame. Another thing that's important is that since you're out of your routine and you have all of these toys that might be in different places than you would ordinarily put them, you need to be sure to help kids realize that when it's daylight, go around with them and put things back where they belong. Not those great forts, but put all the things that are in the way out of the way, because when it's dark in the evening and night, you might trip on something. Something might be where you don't expect it to be. In the case of a snowstorm, when the snow is so very deep, it's lovely to go outside and build and have fun in the snow. But remember not to make forts with tunnels that have roofs on them, because it's fun to make those kinds of caves and tunnels. But for young children in particular, make sure that you as the parent are out there with them when they're inside a tunnel that has a roof, because it can cave in on them. And if you weren't aware of this, this could be catastrophic.
What is a parent's biggest challenge during low-tech living?
I think because sometimes time drags on, when the power doesn't come back on when you really hope it would, it gets really wearing. You know, again, everybody is out of their routine, and you can get cranky. What was first fun and exciting isn't fun and exciting any longer. Maybe all the projects that you had in mind, you've already gone through, and the kids are bored of all the things they already had done. I think one thing you need to do is have some different kinds of emergency supplies, and that's an emergency supply of fun things to do that you haven't yet brought out. A rainy day box that has new toys and games, different art supplies, different puzzles, different books, different card games, those kinds of things. That could definitely help.
I think the surprise factor there, kids would like that a lot.
Kids like new things. But I think something that is important to know, that it's okay if the kids are bored for part of the time. That's something that they need to learn to be able to deal with. And it's something that we can teach them as parents. So you could guide them once they're bored, so you can identify that that is the feeling. And what is it that you can do then when you're bored? Have them be part of that process of thinking, okay, you've already done this and that and the other thing, but what about something different? And go with them to find the different thing. And one of those different things might have come from your rainy day box. It might be writing about how you're bored. There might be a little journal that you could start, and the child could just say, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, even writing that down. And sometimes that turns into a story. Where some kids are really interested in making forts with cushions and boxes and that kind of thing, other kids might not be so interested in that kind of imaginary play. They might want to do more science experiments, maybe have races with balls and ramps, you know, that they could do, stacking plastic cups, playing with magnets. My children particularly liked balls and the ramp of a cushion, and we would get a stopwatch out, and they would time, you know, how fast one ball went and predict how fast the next ball went. And then they would get my measuring tape out and measure which one went the longest and farthest and how would this go. So this, for kids who are not necessarily arts inclined, can be something that's very, very interesting. One thing my children loved to do when they were very young was play with water. Mm-hmm. Go into the bathroom, use the sink, use the kitchen sink, get a great big pot from the kitchen, and just pour water from one container to another, or scoop that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on living low tech when the power is out.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Susan Friend about living low-tech.
What are your favorite outcomes of a low-tech environment?
I think that because there are no distractions, you get a chance to be able to get to know your children better and in a different way. When the power is out, this is really the only time that you don't have all those background noises, the hums of electricity. You can't do your daily chores. The kids can really be a part of what it is that you're going to do, and you get a chance to get to know them at this point in their lives in a way that maybe you wouldn't have been able to when you had all of the stresses of the chores that you needed to get on to next. So my favorite part is really making myself stop and sit down with my children and say, well, tell me about this, and listen to what it is that they're saying. Really, really listen to your children and what they're thinking about and what's important to them, not just to what you think they might want or think or know. Ask about what they've made, what they've drawn, how to play their game. Don't direct them. Just, you know, ask them and then listen and follow through. And I think something else that's very important, that this is really a chance that you might not get otherwise to really share yourself with your kids. You know, do art with your kids. Teach a card game. Teach something that you like to do. Nothing is more important to children than seeing who their parents really are, what their interests are. This is delightful to them, and you can build on that later.
It is interesting, isn't it, that when you get a low-tech environment, whether it's sudden or whether you're doing it on purpose, it slows everything down. We're in such a fast-paced environment. To have a real slowdown gives us a chance to kind of sit back and look around and see what we really consider important.
I agree. And it's a chance to be able to pay attention to many different kinds of things that you maybe aren't able to during the times when you have electricity. There's been so much about attention in the media, and this is a good time for parents to pay attention to who their children are. Interest them now. The whole idea of attention, I think, is fascinating. And I read recently in an article in a magazine called IEEE Spectrum. It's a magazine of technology insiders. And the article is entitled "Your Attention, Please" by Paul McFrades. He says that our lives are interrupt-driven, and they're characterized by constant or frequent interruptions. And the problem with this is one of continuous partial attention. And this is a real problem in our lives today, I think, not only children's lives, but all of our lives. And he goes on to say that the goal seems to be to avoid the micro-boredom of having nothing to do over a very short period of time. This is something that we need to combat, I think, during low-tech times and when the power is on. And having the chance to practice this when the power is off is a good thing. About boredom, this really does give children a chance to get some practice with what to do when they're bored. It's okay for kids to experience some boredom. With guidance, they can learn what to do that will relieve their boredom, and then with practice, they then become able to entertain themselves.
Which is a very important skill we all need as adults, and never too soon to learn it.
Someone once defined boredom as basically the period of time when outside stimuli are not coming in, which means we have to supply it from inside. And it's interesting, if kids get bored very frequently, I think it's a little bit of a red flag. Maybe they're relying on outside stimuli a lot.
And I think sometimes parents are afraid when their children get bored, and they don't want them to be bored for some reason, and then they fill up the time. But having the children have the chance to be able to experience boredom and then be able to have the opportunity to do something about it themselves is a life skill that they need.
The other thing that struck me from something I read or heard was that the most stimulating environment we can give our kids is to let them go outside. and boredom and other things melt away when you get to examine the contents of a stream or take a walk through the backyard. And children have a way of looking down at things that we might totally miss.
Or up.
Certainly, if the power's out and you can get out, that is the thing to do. And then when they do stop and look down, get down with them and look with them and ask them what they see.
Susan, do you have any resources that you might recommend for some of our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been talking about?
There's one source in particular that I think would be something that you could be reading for low-tech times and for times when the power is on. There's a book by Chip Wood called Yardsticks, and what he does there is tell about the developmental characteristics of children as they grow from age 4 to 14. And through that, you can get to know who your child is in general in that age group, and then you would have more ideas of what kinds of things to have around the house.
We have really learned a lot about being able to help our children and to live a little bit more low-tech when the power's out and maybe even when the power's on. So, Susan Friend, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 439 and tell us if you can what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.